Coming up on today's show...
I went to the little kitchen area at the studio, and I was there at the studio working on songs for Jermaine Jackson's album. And I went into the kitchen, and coincidentally, as I walked in the kitchen, Michael Jackson was there.
Here's to the generation of black and white TV. Children of the middle class, free to be who you wanna be. When daddy did the best he could and mama made the meals.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Milan, Italy, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who has created songs for artists such as Michael Jackson, Dolly Parton, Reba McEntire, and his late wife of 30-plus years, Grammy Award-winning singer Donna Summer. Meanwhile, as a recording artist, he just released a new single at the beginning of this month, following a 2024 in which he released three singles plus an album done with a two-time Grammy-winning producer. His resume also includes having appeared on the iconic TV show American Bandstand, a single that hit number 7 on the Billboard charts, and being in both Rolling Stone and Billboard. His official YouTube channel has a total of almost 6 million combined video views, and his top 5 songs on Spotify alone, where he has close to 20,000 monthly listeners, have a combined total of approximately 500,000 streams. You've been hearing a song of his called How'd You Get Here? Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Bruce Sudano.
Hey, Bruce. That was a very good introduction. I should record that and just, you know, use it as my press kit.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for making time to talk with me.
Happy to be here with you today.
Let's get started by having you share with the audience first all about the song of yours that was just playing called How'd You Get Here?
How'd You Get Here? Well, you know, I'm a singer-songwriter of a certain age. I had my first songwriting hit back in 1969 for, a guy named Tommy James. But this song, How'd You Get Here, is basically a song that I wrote for the baby boomer generation, which I am one of. The song starts with the line, here's to the generation of black and white TV, children of the middle class, free to be who you want to be. So it basically talks about, you know, the reality of, you know, we were always, the boomers were the culture, were the youth culture. You know, we were always the young ones. We were the ones pushing the envelope and changing the culture from what it was to what it's become in many ways. And now we find ourselves being of a certain age, encountering a different phase of life. You know, All our lives go through different phases, and now we're of an age of where we're, you know, dealing with different perspectives of life. And how do we navigate this time of our life, and what are the obstacles that we face, and the fears that we face, and the joy that we find at this point in our lives? So, as in all phases of life, there are challenges and there are benefits. So that's kind of what the song is about.
That song sounds like it would be written from personal reflection. So am I safe in assuming that it was a solo write, or was that in fact co-written with someone else?
No, it was a solo write. In fact, since I've been a solo artist, you know, most of my career has been either in playing in bands. I was, you know, in a band called Alive and Kicking. I was in another band called Brooklyn Dreams back in the 70s. Brooklyn Dreams had a song with Donna Summer called Heaven Knows. But in the last 10 or so years, since my wife as you mentioned, was Donna Summer. She passed away back in 2012. And since that time was when I really set out on this solo singer-songwriter career. And in this time, I've only written by myself because I wanted to take this phase of my life to, it's not like I'm chasing pop stardom anymore.
Yeah,
you know, it's more a matter of continuing to evolve as a writer, being able to say the things that I want to say in the way that I want to say them. So everything has been a solo experience in this last decade.
Okay. And that song, How'd You Get Here, was off the album that I mentioned in the intro that you put out last year, an 8-song release titled Talkin' Ugly Truth, Tellin' Pretty Lies. Tell us about that project. What's the theme of the album? Where did you record it? And of course, do share about the 2-time Grammy winner who produced it.
The songs were written mostly here in Milan. I have a studio set up here, and I write here, and here is where I do sketches of the songs. I'll do my vocals, I'll do my guitars, I'll do some keyboard parts. I'll do a sketch. It's what I call a sketch. From there, I would send the files to my producer, whose name is Ken Lewis. And as you mentioned, Ken is a Grammy-winning producer who's worked with everybody from Kanye West to Alicia Keys, on and on. And so we have this relationship where, we go back and forth in the production of the record. We have musicians spread across the country, and we all work remotely, which is not the way I always work or the way I always record my records, but this is how I work with Ken. And it's a very interesting process, and I really like working with Ken because he doesn't think the same way that I think, which is what I like in a producer, because as an artist, I've been doing what I do for many, many years, and whether you like it or not, you have certain habits, you have certain ways of doing things, and in working with Ken, it was interesting because he has another way of thinking and comes at things from a different angle. And it, I think, added a different element to my music that didn't exist before in this way. And that's the benefit of a collaboration. And while I don't collaborate in the songwriting, in the production of my albums, I always do collaborate because I like to have an outside influence in terms of the production.
Yeah, and I like everything you've described because you're not looking for someone who's going to be a yes man. You're asking for someone that's going to give creative input, someone that's going to draw on all the experience that he has and to show you some of the things that can be done with the songs that you've written that maybe you hadn't considered production-wise.
Absolutely, that's exactly right. You know, and in terms of what the songs on the album are about, you know, the title track, Talking Ugly Truth, Telling Pretty Lies, is really, it's a song about a couple of renegades, you know, people who live on the edge and like to do things, around the corner and under the table, thinking they're going to get away with things forever. You know, I liken it to a mafioso story where, you know, the mafia guy gets away with everything his whole life. And then, you know, there he is at 80 years old and he gets arrested for jaywalking and spends the rest of his life in jail. You know, it's like ultimately, I believe things usually catch up with you, you know, and we have a culture right now where I don't want to say it's a culture of lies, but you know, it certainly can seem to lean that way some days, and so that's what the theme of that song is about. You know, there's another song called Under the Gun, which is a little bit of a commentary. You know, I believe in common sense gun control. I think that, you know, there's a sweet spot between not taking away Second Amendment rights, but yet doing things that help protect society at large. I think we can do better in that regard. And I think that this divide about, we can't surrender our Second Amendment rights, I think that, you know, there's a way to accomplish both things. And so that's what Under the Gun deals with, kind of. There's a couple of love songs on the record. There's a song called Better Than This, which basically examines three phases of life. You know, I start out the song where I'm the 17-year-old kid driving around in the middle of the night, you know, passing by some girl's house and taking her for a ride and down Campus Road for some, you know, backseat satisfaction. And then second verse, I get into the guy who's in, you know, the middle of his life and raising his kids and the stress and the joy in every phase of these lives, you know, and ends up at the guy who I am now, who's, you know, just happy to be in bed at night. Wow. With the love of my life, you know, watching a movie on Netflix, you know. So at every phase you could sing, you know, it don't get any better than this. So
well, you know, there's nothing wrong with writing fictional songs, but I love the reality of what you're describing from this project. And the title, Talking Ugly Truth, Telling Pretty Lies, I'm really drawn to that in a way that I'm admiring it. The creativity, but also the reality of it. It makes me think, folks, if you never heard my interview way back on episode 399 with Emma Zink, she is a singer, songwriter, guitar player in Nashville, and she has not released it yet, but there's a song that she performs live that she wrote. It's called something to the effect of Sad People, Happy Pictures, where she talks about everybody tries to post on social media how wonderful they want people to think their lives are, but in reality, there's all this sadness. And Bruce, you're talking about the ugly truth and telling pretty lies and these things that are going to catch up with you eventually. So I love the reality in the songs that you're describing that are on this. The album features a track called Two Bleeding Hearts. I won't steal your thunder, Bruce. Tell the audience about that song and who is featured on it.
Two Bleeding Hearts is a duet with an amazing singer-songwriter whose name is Valerie Simpson. Valerie Simpson was one half of Asher and Simpson, songwriter Hall of Fame, I'm Every Woman, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. So a real honor and a treat to have Valerie duet on a song of mine for the record. You know, we did it as a really simple, clean production, myself on acoustic guitar and vocals, Valerie on piano and vocals, and a little bass and a little drum. And it's just a beautiful song about an argument. It's really about, you know, you're in a relationship, everything is fine, it's a normal day, and then basically out of nowhere, you know, you get into this heated argument and one person goes to one side of the house, the other one goes to the other end of the house. Okay, and who's going to be the first one to say, okay, you know, we're not going to break up here. One of us has to, you know, break the ice and say, I'm sorry, you know, let's put this back together again, you know. So that's kind of the theme of Two Bleeding Hearts. And at the same time, many people listen to that song and they know that I lost my wife, and Valerie also lost her husband, Nick, and basically both passed away back in 2012, you know. Mm. So people listen to that song, you know, as us duetting and with that in their mind, and that's okay too. People are free to paint their own picture.
But I wonder, an audience, you'll see where I'm going with this question, as strange as it's going to initially sound. Bruce, did you and she record that song together in the studio, or was it we never even saw each other? What I'm getting at is, way back on episode 419 of this show, I interviewed Bill Champlin, who had been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band Chicago for 28 years, and he talked about a song that he did with Patti LaBelle. They never even saw each other until a couple years later after the song had come out.
Yeah, basically the same situation. I didn't see Valerie before we recorded the song. Obviously, we spoke and communicated, but she did her vocals and piano in New York, sent me the files, and Ken produced it. But Valerie and I later got together and did a video for the song. which is on YouTube and for everybody to see. And we basically shot the video, Valerie on piano, me on guitar.
Wow.
She has a little club in New York called the Sugar Bar.
Mm.
And so we got together there.
Awesome.
I think it was, maybe a year and a half ago now or something like that, and shot the video together and had a dinner together, and actually that night sang the song live at the Sugar Bar for the audience there.
Very nice. Very nice. The day that this episode comes out, I will be making an evening drive to Miami. A recording artist client of mine is performing there May 1st and 2nd, plus on Saturday the 3rd, she will be at the Key West Songwriters Festival, so I will be down there too. Watch the Instagram account for this show, because on my drive back on Sunday the 4th, I'm going to stop to say hello in person to someone who was a guest long ago on this show. And then I'll head right back to Miami Beach 2 days later, because on the 7th and 8th of May, you can come see me at the convention center there for the B2B Marketing Expo / the Business Show. Not only will there be a booth for my PR agency, Now Hear This Incorporated, but I will be speaking there as well. There is no cost to attend. Register for free by starting at the event website, b2bmarketingexpo.us. That's the number, b2bmarketingexpo.us. I'm also getting ready to announce where I will be the first week of June. Hopeful that I can meet any of you somewhere out on the road so I can say a personal thank you for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. Bruce, there will be lots and lots of folks who come to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because they are friends, they are fans, they are followers of yours. But over my more than 11 years of doing this show, I have been blessed to get listeners from 166 countries around the world. So for some of those people who don't know your backstory, the early years, tell us about your start in music, where you were and how you got into it, plus maybe the American Bandstand story. I'm sure you'll mention Tommy James.
Yes. I was born in Brooklyn, and I like to say I was born in Brooklyn in the shadow of the Brill Building. So as a young kid, I got taken to the Brooklyn Fox Theater and saw a number of the Murray the K, Alan Freed rock and roll shows, and this was my initial inspiration. And my father had a jukebox route, and at the end of the week, he would come home with a bunch of 45s that he would have to change out in the machines.
Hmm.
And I became intrigued with the names under the song title in parentheses. And these were the songwriters.
Yeah.
From a very early age, 9 years old, it was my dream to be a songwriter. This is how... for me, being a songwriter isn't a job. It was a calling. From a very early age, I knew what I wanted to do. And I began by writing songs. I would put bands together in the neighborhood. I grew up in Flatbush and put a number of bands together and, started writing songs for the bands. And this is how I began to develop as a songwriter. And then back in 1968, I had a band called Alive and Kickin', and we were the house band at a big club in Manhattan. In those days, was called the Cheetah. The Cheetah was one of the most popular clubs in the city in those days. It was the original place where the musical Hair was formed. So we were the house band there, playing six nights a week.
Wow.
Five sets a night.
Wow.
40 minutes on, 20 minutes off. As fate would have it, Tommy James lived around the corner, came into the club one night. Me being an aspiring songwriter, Tommy had already had songs like Hanky Panky and Money Money, and I Think We're Alone Now. He was a very big star in America in those years, and he was very kind to me. I got to meet him. He lived around the corner. I would go around the corner on breaks to his apartment and try to write songs with him.
Wow.
I was fortunate enough to get on a song of his called Ball of Fire, which was released in 1969 and was a top 20 record back in those days. He brought me into the recording studio. I got to see him make Crimson and Clover and Crystal Blue Persuasion. I saw how a pop record was made. He brought me up to Roulette Records, Alive and Kicking, got signed to Roulette Records. The following year, he produced the band. We had a big song called Tighter and Tighter. Went, hold on just a little bit tighter now, baby.
Yeah.
I got to take my first flight out of New York City to Los Angeles to be on American Bandstand. Got to go back to be on American Bandstand a number of years later with my second band, Brooklyn Dreams. We had an album came out, and we got to be on American Bandstand with Donna Summer. She introduced us. Brooklyn Dreams did a big song with Donna called Heaven Knows. Was a co-writer of Bad Girls and four songs on the Bad Girls album for Donna. And
just amazing. Just amazing.
You know, got married in 1980. Had a big hit for Dolly Parton, number one country song called Starting Over Again. You know, and just had a career as a songwriter. And I've been
amazing.
Very blessed. I have 9 grandchildren. I have 3 amazing daughters. One of my daughters is a singer. She's in a band called Johnny Swim. If you're not familiar with Johnny Swim, go check out Johnny Swim. You will love them, I'm sure. And yeah, how's that for a mouthful?
Yeah, and I love that you said that it was a calling, because that's actually the word that popped into my head, because not very many people at all back in those days would look at a record and their eyes drop down below the artist. They would want to be the artist. They would want to have the name that was in bold type in larger print. And so for you to be focused on, well, who are these people underneath it? Who are these songwriters? That's what I want to do. Clearly, that's a calling. And for those that don't know the name Tommy James, look up. You'll see Tommy James and the Shondells. But let's go back to the part of your story, Bruce. I want to drill down into your beloved, dearly departed wife. Tell us more about first meeting Donna Summer, how that came to be.
I moved out to Los Angeles. I formed a group called Brooklyn Dreams with Jobin Esposito and Eddie Hogenson. We got signed as a first act to a label that was called Millennium Records, which was formed by Jimmy Einer. Jimmy Einer was the producer of the Raspberries, Eric Carmen, All By Myself, Grand Funk Railroad. Anyway, we were the first act signed to this label. The label was distributed through Casablanca. We also had a friend from Brooklyn whose name was Susan Mineo. She was the director of publicity at Casablanca Records. And we were over at her apartment on Benedict Canyon visiting her when Donna came by. This was 1977. She had just returned to America after living 8 years in Germany. She came back to America. She had a hit song called Love to Love You, Baby. And this is when we met. We began writing songs from the day that we met and got married in 1980, toured together a lot. And yeah, had a beautiful life, raised 3 daughters together. And as I said, now I have 9 grandchildren.
Yeah, 32 years of marriage. That's amazing. That's amazing. And audience, when I mention past episodes like I did with Emma Zink and with Bill Champlin, please always know that I always put links on the show page for that guest's episode on nhte.net. So you can go and listen to the likes of Emma Zink and Bill Champlin. In this case, you just heard Bruce mention that one of the artists on the label that his band was signed to was Grand Funk Railroad. And in fact, one of the founding members of that band, Mark Farner, was on this show, came out back on Christmas Day at the end of 2024. So I'll put a link to that one also. Bruce, you started to talk about this earlier, but while we're talking about Donna, there's a quote from you that I would like to read and have you take us through. With regards to her having passed away, you said, quote, "I did not have Donna to write for anymore. I was at the age where I'm not going to put another group together. Instead, maybe I could be the singer-songwriter that I didn't take the opportunity to be before," end quote. Walk us through that time, that thought process, that decision, that reflection, if you would.
Well, I was in a couple of bands there, and then Brooklyn Dreams did 4 albums in total. And then in 1980, I got a record deal through RCA, and did a solo album. It was at that point that I realized, you know, it was the same year that I got married. Very soon after that, our first child was born. And I realized that it didn't seem feasible to me to be able to maintain me having a solo career, Donna having the career that she was having, and us having a family. And, you know, as I said, my dream was always to be a songwriter. So I decided at that point to put down the idea of being an artist or being in a band as an artist, mm-hmm. or like that, and that I would concentrate just on writing songs for Donna and for other people. This way I could maintain my family and maintain Donna's career and maintain our lives together. You know, there was no regrets. I had no regrets in doing this. I had, you know, a very successful career writing for other artists, writing for movies, working with Donna, touring with Donna, playing on stage with Donna for many, many years. And so when she passed away, it just seemed like the next natural step for me was to do my second solo album, you know, and to continue doing that. So the writing became my refuge after she passed away. And you know, I realized that it's very important to have a sense of purpose and to challenge yourself in life, you know. And so it wasn't a matter of me saying, well, I can't do this at this age or anything like that. You know, you have to continue to challenge yourself. You have to continue to stay engaged, you know. And I was surprised to find that you know, I still had plenty of things to say. Mm. I still had plenty of room to grow as a writer, wow. as a singer, as a performer.
Wow.
And in these last 10 years, I've grown tremendously in these areas. Oof. And you know, I'm now able to entertain an audience by myself. Mm. I have plenty of stories to tell, and I completely enjoy it. So I carry on.
Wow. Wow, that's powerful. That's powerful. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Milan, Italy, by singer, songwriter, guitar player, recording artist Bruce Sudano. Visit his official website at brucesudano.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard him talking about the album he released last year called Talkin' Ugly Truth, Tellin' Pretty Lies. You can get a signed vinyl copy or signed CD copy from the shop section of his website, where there is CD and vinyl for other releases of his as well. Certainly, his music is available digitally from the likes of iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, and other similar platforms. He is very much on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. There are links for all of those at the bottom of brucesudano.com. For those of you who have not been listening all the way to the end of the podcast each week, here is what you miss out on. I always close by saying how much I appreciate you tuning in to Now Hear This Entertainment. I'm optimistic that you're enjoying what you're hearing. If you would like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen, week after week, year after year, 11 years without missing once, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It's simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. Bruce, I mentioned in there that your latest release is available on vinyl and CD. Since you've seen all the various formats, vinyl to CD to streaming, and now vinyl coming back, I'd love to hear your thoughts, your opinion on those changes, as well as your decision to go to the expense of making physical units available.
You know, my philosophy has always been that, you know, as with all things in life, but specifically to the music business, you know, it's always changing. And I'm not somebody who likes to lament the past and longs for what was. And, you know, I appreciate what was. I'm very grateful that I came up in the music world at the time that I did. I'm grateful for all the experiences that I've had. But at every phase along the way, there have been changes. Part of being in the music business is being able to adapt to the changes. So that's what I do. I don't wrestle with it. I don't lament what was. I look to the future. I try to see what's happening now, where it's going to go, and try to stay with it as best as I can. The heart and soul of what I do and the purpose of, as we said, my calling is to continue to write. My motto is keep living, keep writing. So you stay engaged, listen to people, to what their stories are, to what their feelings are. I have my own thoughts and feelings about things. I digest these things. I assimilate these things. And I try to put them back out there in a poetic, artistic, musical way. This is my calling. This is my purpose. This is what I enjoy doing. This is where I know who I am. This is what I do. And I feel very grateful for that ability.
Nicely said. Nicely said. And you certainly know as well as I that there are people who would rather lament what has changed or the way things should be. And so hats off to you for embracing what the current state of the business is and responding accordingly and having that attitude. I mentioned at the start of this episode, and again during the break, that you're actually calling in from Milan, Italy. When and why did you set up residence over there, and where is home when you're here in the United States?
I live in Milan because I remarried, and I married a girl from Italy. I live here in Milan part of the time. My life usually breaks down into three thirds, let's put it that way. I'm a third of my time here in Milan. I'm a third of the time in the States. I live in Los Angeles when I'm in the States. And a third of the time, I'm typically on the road playing somewhere. That's kind of how my life breaks up these days. I like it very much. I think that Milan is an interesting balance to Los Angeles. Milan is a very engaging city. It's a very artistic city. It's a very fashionable city. There's a lot of philosophy here in Milan and people with interesting thoughts. There's a lot of talented musicians. I have an Italian band here. I play in here in Italy and around Europe, not frequently, but often enough. And so I have an Italian band, which is an interesting combination of musicians. It's a percussionist, a bassist, and a cellist, along with myself on guitar. And I like it because it's also a contrast musically to the band that I have in Los Angeles, which is more electric guitar, keyboard, and drums, you know. So it's a different interpretation of my music. So it keeps it interesting for me as well as for the listeners.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And I've been fortunate to go to Milan twice, and Bruce can appreciate this as well as any of you that have gone there, but when I hear of Milan, Italy, the first thing that I think of is the Cathedral Duomo and how beautiful that is, how historic it is. And that really does kind of get the hairs on your arm to stand up when you see it from the outside, never mind walk inside.
Yes, and I'm lucky that I get to see it all the time because I live very close to the Duomo. So, yeah, it definitely is something that can take your breath away. And I live right behind a very old church. And so part of what I do is, you know, I go into the church a few times a week, not at times when there's a service or a mass or anything like that. But, you know, I was raised Catholic, and I find that there's a certain spiritual center that I find when I just go and sit in an empty church. And it gives me time to reconnect and line myself up spiritually and listen to the voice of the Spirit and see what they're saying. And so it's also part of my practice. And I think that also influences what I write about.
Amen. Amen. I love it. Let's go to that third of your life that you described, which is on the road. Are you at a stage in life where you want to do less and less of that, or is it quite the opposite? Well, I still have an album that I have to promote. I still have a new single I have to promote. So no, I'm trying to fill up that third with dates.
I have it down to, you know, a pretty good balance of where I'm comfortable. I'm always looking for dates here and there, and you know, I like them to be either comfortable or meaningful. So, you know, I've done a number of shows in Florida. You know, I was on tour with the Zombies. I played Fort Lauderdale and Clearwater last year.
Wow.
I was on the Blue Cruise. We sailed out of Miami and came back. In fact, I used to have a house on Manasota Key, which is not too far from where you are. So many times flew out of the Tampa airport.
Mm, it's a small world after all.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I do always love to have teaching moments for anyone listening who are themselves up-and-coming performers. What is maybe the biggest piece of advice you would have for those folks, Bruce? And maybe what is the biggest mistake that you see them making?
Well, I don't know about the biggest mistake that I see them making. I only know for myself that, you know, artistically, you want to be yourself. You have to find out who you are. You want to work with your strengths. Not that you don't listen and learn and assimilate from other people. But the biggest mistakes that I've made as an artist is when I've tried to copy someone else, or when I've tried to imitate something else. You know, there have been different times over the course of my career. You know, when I was a younger artist and, you know, success was my driving motivation, you know, there were times in my career where I would chase this or chase that, whether musically, stylistically, or whatever. And more often than not, it was not my best work because I wasn't being true to myself.
Wow.
So I don't know if there's any instruction in that, but that's my answer to your question.
Yeah, no, there is. There is. And be yourself is a very simple but profound lesson because you're right. You're going to go off in this other direction and find that you're chasing something that is not authentic. And eventually it's going to get tired because it's almost like an act that you have to keep up where you have to not only see what this other person's doing that you're trying to duplicate so much, but you're losing contact with what drove you to create music in the first place. So it's a great lesson. I do want you to clarify for us, you release music under Purple Heart Recording Company. Is that your own record label? And if so, is that just for you, or do you look for other artists who you might want to sign to that?
It is my own record label. I started it back in the early 90s. At the time, I had signed a few different artists and had produced one or two other artists under that label. It was dormant for a number of years. And then when I started this solo career again, I broke it back out. And so right now I'm the only artist under Purple Heart Recording Company, and that's probably the way it's going to stay.
Okay. And I like to clarify that so that someone doesn't get ambitious and contact you and say, I'd love for you to sign me to your label. And then you say, gosh, I'm sorry. It's not that kind of operation.
Yeah, I'm a songwriter. I get up every day and I write a song.
We're in the home stretch. Before we start to wind things down, I cannot have a guest on with the resume that you have and not ask you to pick one of the countless fun stories that I know you have from throughout your career. Whether that's with Donna Summer or not, can you entertain us with a great memory that stands out from some point in your many decades of doing music?
Okay. We used to record in Los Angeles back in the 80s in a studio called Lion's Share. And this was a studio complex. There were, I think, if I remember correctly, four studios in this building. And in this building, it was, you know, in every room there was a different person. You know, David Foster would be in one room. Quincy would be in another room. Michael Amardian might be in another room. You know, so this one day, I went to the little kitchen area at the studio. And I was there at the studio working on songs for Jermaine Jackson's album.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the kitchen, and coincidentally, as I walked in the kitchen, Michael Jackson was there.
Mm.
And I said, oh, hi. And, you know, I think I had met Michael once or twice before, but not in a way that he would remember who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I reintroduced myself to him and said, you know, I'm working on songs for your brother, Jermaine. And he was like, oh, I'd really love to hear what you're doing. So somehow he gets with Jermaine and listens to the songs that we're working on and decides that he wants to sing on one of the songs, which we were thrilled. So Michael ends up singing on a song called Tell Me I'm Not Dreaming. And
I love that
everybody's
song.
Excited. The record comes out. It is flying up the charts. You know, it's just zooming. And we're like, wow, this is amazing. We're going to have this big hit record with Michael and Jermaine. But what happened was that Michael never asked his company, Epic Records, for permission to sing on the song.
Oh, boy.
And Jermaine was on Arista Records. So as the record was breaking, Epic puts an injunction on the song.
Wow.
Boom. The song gets stalled. It gets to the top of the dance chart. It gets to the top of the R&B chart, but never quite made it to the top of the pop chart.
Wow.
Got nominated for a Grammy, never made it to the top of the pop chart.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow.
That's that story.
Amazing. Amazing. And it really is a great song. Audience, if you've been listening for a long time, you know that I always say that if there's a song that I particularly like, I go out of my way to say so. And it doesn't mean that I don't like the songs that I don't comment on. It's just that I really do enjoy the ones that I go out of my way to talk about. And that's one that I always like. So hats off to you for your role in that. And thank you. What an entertaining story. And we're going to close today with the title track from the album that Bruce released last year called Talkin' Ugly Truth, Tellin' Pretty Lies. Bruce, before I let you go and I play that song, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Well, as I said earlier, it's a song about a couple of renegades produced by Ken Lewis and a little homage to Lou Reed. Buried in there somewhere. See if you can hear it.
Did it come out the way that we're going to hear it, close to the way that it was when you originally conceptualized the song? Or were there some, I'm not going to say significant changes, but notable enough that to you, you said, well, I'm obviously happy with it because I'm releasing it, but it's not entirely the way it was when I first came up with it.
You know, it's very different from the sketch.
Wow.
That I have of this song.
Wow.
I mean, the song is essentially the same. The melody is there. The story's there. It's all the same. But Ken's production is markedly different and, dare I say, much better.
But that's great testimony to letting people excel at what they do. It's like when you hear someone who's in Nashville that says, oh, gosh, no, I didn't play guitar on this. I know it's my song and I do play guitar, but there are far better guitar players in Nashville than me. So I love when guests come on the show and talk about letting people excel at what they do. And you just got out of his way and let him produce, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that's exactly right. Let people do what they do best. That's not to say if I didn't like it or if I, you know, you'll hear it. I'm sure the people are going to like it. It's a really great production.
Awesome. Awesome. Bruce, terrific to meet you. Thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. And you have a great first name.
Likewise. Likewise. Thank you so much.
All right. Hope to talk again, Bruce.
Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player, recording artist Bruce Sudano. Do visit his official website at brucesudano.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You are about to hear the title track, but again, the album he released last year is available, signed, on vinyl or CD from the shop section of his website. Additionally, you can get it digitally from iTunes, Amazon, and other online digital music retailers, Plus, of course, it is available for streaming on Spotify. This morning, I followed Bruce on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and I'm sure he would appreciate you doing the same. There are links to all of those, plus his official YouTube channel as well, at the bottom of brucesudano.com. That's going to do it for episode 585. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Bruce Sudano. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Talking Ugly Truth, Telling Pretty Lies.
He tells her what she wants to hear. She's got her own twisted reality. It's late night sex and warm Belgian beer. Living lives of stolen opportunity. Now she got more tattoo cool than him. He keeps the weapons buried in their waterbed. Dripping on the dark with the black light dim. They keep repeating stories they've already said. It's been a wild ride, filled with lows and highs. You take all your medicine in stride, driving down the dark side with the shadows of the night. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. All that dirty money that got washed away, it all comes back to haunt you like a doggone bed. Just when you think you've made your great escape, you find another way to just get caught again. It's been a hard time. A truth no one denies. Make stupid choices and you pay the price. Rolling with the crazy down a crooked mind, talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Nothing lasts forever, nothing's ever free. Better learn that lesson before it gets too late. 'Cause you don't see him coming when the man is on his way. Got you with your pants down around your knees. Fascination is Bonnie and Clyde. Didn't they see the way that story ends? Shot them all to pieces, the way to end your life. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Just talking ugly truth, telling pretty lies. Just talk.